Goodbye, Florida Gulf Coast. Hello, March Madness. Conference tournaments are underway as we speak. Recording here on Monday night, the first day of conference tournament action. Lots to get to as we wander our way towards Selection Sunday. Brad, it is always bittersweet when we tip things off in conference tournament play. Season's coming to an end, but as you know, it's basically portal season already. And carousel. We've had an active carousel today. I think seconds before we got on, Pepperdine Open, Pacific Open. So obviously a lot to get to with the games, but certainly a exciting time of year, even if your team is coming to team season is coming to an end.
How about my Friars? All they have to do is win against UConn. That's all. At least it's straightforward.
Do you have to beat UConn, you think?
Absolutely. Unless, if I could, like, pick the outcome of, like, 30 other games, you know, like, let's have Utah and Colorado lose to the Oregon schools. Let's have Iowa lose to Illinois in their first Big Ten game. And, you know, St. John's was Georgetown. If I could play God, then we wouldn't have to. But looking like we need to beat probably be Georgetown, UConn, and then DePaul in the Big East tournament. So no easy task for a team that really hasn't looked all that good recently.
Well, there's still hope alive. And if nothing else, UConn doesn't have a ton to play for in that last game. So. Maybe you sneak up on him, maybe you swoop in. I do hope we see Devin Carter in the NCAA tournament. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a commitment right now. I'm going to make a commitment right now. 9:10 Eastern on Monday, March the 4th, that I will place a wager on Providence Moneyline over at BovadaSportsbook.com to beat UConn over the weekend.
The issue with Providence is they're so easy to prepare for. It's like you do a little ball pressure and you front a Duro, and then you kind of either ice or kind of trap the ball screen, and we can't even get a shot at the rim. Your buddy Kim English has no bag. He has no plays of any kind. You know, except these like freewheeling concepts where we had like 6 shot clock violations because nobody wants to shoot because they're all like a 34% 3-point shooter.
Well, I think the issue really is that they don't have enough. Is that none of these? They don't have good enough players to play this style. But I'm also not convinced that running sets would magically make Rich Barron look better.
They have enough players.
Without Devin Carter,
I will go to my grave.
Without Bryce Hopkins, I don't think they have enough players.
They still have enough players. Absolutely. I will go to my grave that if we don't make the tournament, Kim English gets a big F. And I'm the only one who thinks that. Everyone else, it's butterflies and rainbows. You know, they'll criticize the whole team. You know, Pierre and Floyd and Tickett, they'll criticize everybody except for Kim English while we go play in the NIT. And we shoot 35 three-pointers.
Well, hopefully Kim English gets better players for you next year, Brad, so that he can stop criticizing him.
Well, that's the thing about the portal. In, like, the heat of, you know, the past 2 or 3 portal years, we've seen, like, it... The portal creates so much parity that, like, you can get a couple of mediocre portal guys that, like, everyone agrees is mediocre. But you plug them in, and all of a sudden, you're rolling. Like, Talon Cooper was a mediocre pickup. BJ Mack was a solid pickup. They plugged him in with a couple of decent returners, and now South Carolina is going to be like a freaking 5 seed. It was the same when Providence plugged in Manaya and Durham to a bunch of, you know, it's just, or Northwestern, Kansas State, you know, there's like 4 or 5 teams every year.
Well, I saw a chart the other day. I think it was from Torvik. If I'm wrong and someone wants to link it, please do. It was basically a talent a talent disparity chart, basically like talent versus where you finished. And there was such a strong correlation in like 2019 between like recruiting ranking and like your basically your roster's recruiting ranking and where you were finishing in like the T rank algorithm. And now there's almost no correlation. It's like basically a flat line. And part of that, I'm sure, is that like teams like, you know, there's teams that are built on portal guys. And like, I don't think that, you know, for instance, Dalton Connect's like a 0-star recruit. Dalton Connect is also like, you know, one of the 3 best players in the country. Purdue, you know, Zach Edey's a 3-star recruit. You know, he's the best player in the country. Like, I think a lot of that's, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, certainly there are fewer teams that are just like overwhelmingly talented based on like pedigree. The path to building a better team, as you said.
Are they where's a good place to start? I know on the CBS pod they did 20 minutes of Big East. I don't think they need to do that, but
no. I would like to start with Tennessee. Is that all right?
I mean, they're going to be a one seed, I think.
I mean, this was a transformational week for the Vols. Beat Auburn 92-84 in a game that they trailed big with like 10 minutes to go, and then Dalton Connect went nuclear. Then in the Saturday game against Alabama, you know, go on the road, College Game Day, huge atmosphere again, trailed late in that game, 62-57, I believe, at one point. And just couldn't hold, you know, Alabama couldn't hold on. Tennessee goes on the run, wins the game, win a game despite Dalton Connect having foul trouble, only scoring 13 points, only shooting, you know, 5-for-14 from the field. But I think Tennessee continues to impress, continues to prove itself as a legitimate title contender. Lots of skepticism about Rick Barnes in March. Obviously, that's earned based on past issues, but it just feels different, doesn't it, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, their offense hasn't shown up every game, but certainly much elevated with a NBA lottery pick guy in Connect who can explode. Ziegler's playing better. Their front court's really, I mean, they're just a, you know, they have the role allocations done pretty well. They're a well-oiled machine. You know, a lot of people have Arizona still as that fourth number one seed. At least anecdotally, it feels like Tennessee has slipped up less. And, you know, at the time, I remember they lost to South Carolina, and it was like, oh, geez, that's a weird loss. But now South Carolina is right in the thick of it for the SEC championship. So, yeah, this Tennessee team, I mean, I guess you could point to, like, some of the Grant Williams teams that flamed out as having, you know, a lot of both NBA talent and some more scoring pop, but this team has the elite defense and has the NBA talent would connect, and they're in a much better position.
Yeah, they've never had a team that was top 20 offense, top 20 defense. The team in 2022 that lost to Michigan was a very good offense. They were 35th in KenPom, and then they had that awful 3-for-21 day, 2-for-18 day against Michigan in the Sweet 16 and lost the game. They were leading big until late in the game. I mean, I think they were up 60-54 with 8 minutes to go in that game and just couldn't finish it. That team had Kennedy.
And then it was Jordan Bone, Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, and Kyle Alexander. That's 4 NBA players.
So that team.
Fringe NBA players, except for Williams, but.
That team, I think you're referring to 2019. So that team had Grant as a sophomore. And that team was a 3-seed and lost to Loyola. They were an elite offense. They lost on the buzzer beater to Loyola with the
Ingram, yeah.
Yeah, no. Ingram was the first game against Miami. Custer hit the leaner in the second game. And then the next year they came back with Grant. They were an elite offense. But they didn't have, you know, they were much worse defensively. And then they lost to Purdue in overtime they lost in overtime in the Sweet 16, and then Purdue lost in overtime in the Elite Eight to Virginia. That was really an all-time tournament looking back. And it's funny because people think about people like, I remember like, there was so much narrative at the time about Purdue or Virginia versus Texas Tech. What a terrible final. Like, think about the number of like just epic games. Like, that game was epic. The Purdue Virginia game was epic. The Virginia Auburn game was epic. That tournament had like the Duke, Zion storyline. That Zion team goes down in the Elite Eight, had the scare against UCF. There was upsets. Like, that was
a fall. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
that was incredible. And it's also crazy to look back and think we had a Virginia Texas Tech final.
It is wild. And Virginia has not won an NCAA tournament game since.
Virginia can't even score over 50 points, except against Boston College.
We will get into Virginia in a bit, but just kind of closing the book on Tennessee, like, I truly believe this team can win a national championship. I hope they make a Final Four. Like, I think they're just a fun team, right? Like, you know, the story of Dalton is incredible. The Zakai Ziegler storyline is incredible. The versatility that they have, the experience, Josiah James coming back, Adu's been phenomenal. I just really like this team's makeup, and I think they have a great chance to make a run here.
It's funny because we're going to have a lot of narratives tested, right? When you think, well, people say Purdue can't do it, right? UConn's got to go back-to-back. There's a little Houston skepticism. Now it might be warranted a little now that Tugler's out. I'm not sure where they go when Roberts or Francis is off the court to stay big there. We have Tennessee with the Rick Barnes stuff. Arizona's had a few miscues in March recently, and Sean Miller couldn't get over the hump. Marquette with Shaka, right? So there's a lot of teams at the top that have these media and fan narratives that they have to overcome.
No question. I wanted to mention Auburn, just, you know, staying in the SEC, because I don't think there's ever been a team. I'm trying to think. I think Houston is probably the most, you know, the best comparison. Houston 2 years ago, when they had the Sasser injury, that the metrics and the resume are so divided. Auburn is a top 5 to 10 team in the country based on every number, and yet they have one quadrant one win, and they don't have an opportunity to get one. They will enter the SEC tournament with one quad one win.
I mean, losing at Appalachian State was like the all-time missed opportunity. Like, that is like the quadrant one game that you dream of. For whatever reason, they were playing it on the road, and they lose that game in early November. And Appalachian State's going to be, you know, either them or James Madison will be a great 12 or 13 seed. But I think maybe it's something about Auburn's size and athleticism allows them to dominate against inferior teams. And then you think about the quadrant one games that you get in the SEC, and they're very challenging, right? Like, you might have to go, you know, at Alabama, at Kentucky, you know, at Tennessee. Those are some of the and then the home games against them are also going to be high quadrant one and super challenging. So it's not like some of these leagues where you can pick off, you know, winning at Xavier or winning at, Virginia, or beating Clemson at home and getting a easier quadrant one win. Like, in the SEC, you really have to earn it.
Yes, 100%. It's just kind of worked out against them, in that, like, the teams like LSU and Ole Miss and those teams Georgia, they've all fallen outside of quad one, whereas a lot of times you get like a sneaky like 72, 73. So look, I just know I'm going to bet Auburn. Like, I'm going to, like, we're going to get to the end of time. Like, I'm going to hit Bovada and I'm going to bet Auburn, just because I can't kick them. And I think the only thing that I really worry about roster wise is point guard play. But I'm just drawn to them. Like, there's just always that one team, right, where you're like, I remember this. I think the first time I ever felt this way, this is, I guess, really bad news for Auburn. The first time I was ever drawn to a team like this was the Phil Pressey Missouri team that lost
Kim English.
Norfolk State. Yeah, Kim English, yeah. Like, I was like, oh, that team has the juice. I thought the same thing about, like, the Shane Larkin Miami team. I feel that way about Auburn. I don't know. Just something about them. Like I won't be – every time they lose, I'm, like, shocked that they lost.
Like, they aren't even getting, like, their ideal outcome on all their all these players, right? Like, Aiden Holloway hasn't been that good. Katie Johnson has been in a smaller role. Like, they have a lot of guys who had higher upside than what they're actually putting out. And they're still an elite team. Jani Broom is still, you know, he's not getting any buzz for an All-American. But it's funny, when Dick Vitale had him on his All-American team in the preseason, our first instinct was like, what? But then you look at it, you look at his numbers, you look at how good Auburn was going to be, and you say, you know what? This kind of makes sense. And Auburn, you know, I think I had them 22nd or so in the preseason. They're way better than that. So Broom, despite getting no buzz, should still be like an All-American level player.
I will say this. If Auburn winds up on the 5 line, they will be the one exception to these 5s and 6s feel very weak. And I think there's a decent chance that they can win their way up to a 4. But I think
Florida's scary too.
Yes. No question. But
Florida's really scary. And if Michigan State, I mean, they have the great metrics. It's funny, them and Gonzaga, right? Michigan State is still kind of on the bubble because if they lose out, they're done. But if they, you know, put together a few wins, they're going to be like a 6 seed. Gonzaga was the same way last week, right? And now they won their games, and they're rapidly climbing here as well.
I just think there has been a pretty substantial cutoff after like number 17, right? I think San Diego State or Auburn right now is number 17, and it feels like a big cutoff down to like Clemson and St. Mary's and BYU. I just think there's a pretty substantial divide there.
Absolutely. But then, like, as you kind of get up, the 8 and 9 seeds are pretty good compared to past years. And I still think that these bubble teams are better than most years' bubble teams. But let's see. Kind of crazy that everyone had written off Iowa. I liked Iowa, and I still even wrote them off. Like, I think they're good, but it's just not going to happen. Few road wins, and they found themselves in a spot where if they beat Illinois, they're in great shape going into the Big Ten tournament.
It's interesting because it feels, you know, it shouldn't matter when you win your games, right? Like, realistically, the wins are the wins. But it does feel as though, like, Ohio State and Iowa, it just feels like they're, like, sneaking into things. And they just, they're fraudulent and they're going to steal a bid. Whereas, like, Wisconsin, like, did all their work early and now they stink. Like, Wisconsin's, like, there's a chance that if Wisconsin can't beat Purdue or beat Rutgers on Thursday, there's a very good chance they enter the tournament losers of 10 of 12. And that's if they make it, 18 and 14.
So that would be, yeah, losing their first round Big Ten tournament game as well?
Yes.
The poster child for this was the Bobby Hurley Arizona State team with Shannon Evans and Cody Justice and Trey Holder, right? Where they won at Kansas, and they had, like, the greatest non-conference schedule of all time, or the greatest non-conference wins of all time. And then went like 7-11 in a bad Pac-12 and like snuck in. And I guess that there's teams like that every year, but Wisconsin was one that never felt that intimidating. Like, even when they were up as like a 2 seed and they'd won all those games, like, they're not that athletic. You know, the Chucky Hepburn and Stephen Crowell don't scare you. Storr was playing out of his mind early. But But that talent level wasn't on par with these top tier SEC teams or Big 12 teams.
Yeah, look, I do think it'd be interesting. Like, if Wisconsin's really 18 and 14 losers of 10 of 12, I think it'd be hard to put them in.
It's just that they have so many quad one wins and no bad losses, right? That's the let me pull up their T rank, but I mean now with the road quadrant two cutoff being like 135, it's like it gets tough to even get bad losses if you're in one of these top three or four conferences.
Yeah, they have no like horrific losses. Like they've lost at Michigan, they've lost at Penn State, at Indiana. So I don't think any of those are quad three yet. Rutgers at home.
T-Rank has them with six quad one wins.
Correct.
Six quad two wins, and then only six wins combined quad three and quad four with no bad losses.
Yes. So they have a great resume. It's hard to impeach. But just optically, I think it's hard to put in a team that's lost 10-12. Maybe I'm wrong. Again, there's a good chance they beat Rutgers and it's fine. Right? Then they're just like a normal like swooning team. But I think if they've lost 10-12, then I think there has to be a conversation at least at 18-14 Wisconsin's not a tournament team.
It all started with that game that they blew against Nebraska. Which is gonna put Nebraska in, and it started this crazy slide. But
it is wild that Nebraska's only lost one home game all season, and it was to Creighton by 30.
Yeah, I have watched that game too. That was a bludgeoning. People harp on their road record and everything, but I mean they beat Purdue. Maybe Wisconsin. Not like a crazy resume, but it's gonna be.
I think Nebraska is one of those teams where they would be in my field and they would be in most fields, even if they lost to Michigan and then they lost their first game of the Big Ten tournament. But they wouldn't be a lock, right? They'd be a lock to be in my field, but there's not a guarantee that the committee would put them in. I think they went to Michigan. Nothing could happen that could screw them up. But I think with all these teams that we're kind of skeptical of, like we just always keep watching with bated breath, like, oh, when's it going to screw up? And it's like, all right, like we're out of games. Like, there's not enough time to screw this up.
That's me with Utah and Colorado, where a couple weeks ago they took some missteps. They both won close road games against the LA schools. Where they lost the first one, and they won their second one. And since then, they've just been kind of beating up on quad three guys. And this week, they're on the road to the Oregon schools. And they win them both, they're probably in decent shape.
That Oregon has a chance to be quite the spoiler this weekend, where they're probably out. They probably can't make the tournament, but they could sweep Colorado and Utah and really cause some problems.
And all three of them would end up on like the first four out.
Yes.
Or like between like third and sixth out or something. But I watched some of that Colorado-Stanford game last night. Stanford is so bad. It was, us bubble teams, we needed this win. Stanford, they couldn't make layups. They're doing crazy, terrible passes. They looked like they had no talent. How is this a team in the preseason that, people were so high on? At least I think I had them at like 60th or something, like a four seed in the NIT, and they just looked terrible. I know Spencer Jones is out. And Bynum, I guess, is getting a healthy benched. But that was just a brutal watch for a team that needed Stanford to pull off the upset.
I will say this. The Pac-12 really might be the set epicenter of the coaching carousel.
If Dan Altman retires, class is gone.
Yeah. Washington, Stanford, Arizona State potentially, Oregon potentially, Washington State could open.
Washington State has to open. Kyle Smith's got to get out of there.
You love Kyle Smith. You've been pushing Kyle Smith for every job there is. Oregon State could open.
Now, Oregon State shouldn't open, right? Because if you're a middle of the map WCC job, like that would be a reasonable hire to get Wayne Tinkle, you'd say, right?
Well, so let's play this out, right? If Pacific, you know, Pacific's the worst job in the league. If Oregon yep. State hired Wayne Tinkle and they hired Wayne Tinkle, would you be like, that's a good hire?
No, I wouldn't be like cackling about it. I mean, wouldn't it kind of just be like Steve Lavin to San Diego?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
But that was a horrible hire.
That's fair.
Like, that was awful. So, I don't know.
Like, who even hire at these places? Like, San Diego, like...
You're hiring, like, David Riley and Chris Victor, and you could hire, like, an assistant. You could hire, like, Ali Farouk-Manesh or, you know, someone like that. Wonder if you could get, like, Tim Miles to go to Oregon State.
From San Jose State?
Yeah. Always awkward to hire someone off the last place finish, but I could see it.
I mean, that's the theme of the carousel this year. A lot of guys who want to leave are not doing well. It's going to be, you know, there was a post on Twitter I saw where Ohio State fans were in the comments being like, under no circumstances do we want Sean Miller. It's just when you have a bad record the year before you're moving, it's going to be a tough sell.
I think if Bovada were offering odds on this, I think I would bet Dusty to Ohio State at the moment.
Now, the whole thing with LeBron, he's trying to sign Dusty May as a client for Rich Paul, and or listen, he wants Bronny.
As I understand it, Dusty May already works with Clutch, so I don't understand where that narrative is quite.
The whole narrative was Dusty has no agent. Is that the narrative?
I don't think that narrative is correct. I could be wrong, but my understanding was that Dusty, even if he's not formally with Clutch, is like informally with Clutch.
I mean, that every single, think about it, everyone who wants to move, right? You got Sean Miller, you got Musselman, Mick Cronin. Everyone is having a down here who wants to move. And if Greg McDermott, stays pat and Mont Paris stays in South Carolina, I mean, it's really just going to be, you know, shuffling coaches off a bad season.
Why don't we just hire some mid-major guys? Got some names, yeah.
How about this? If Dusty goes to Ohio State, who's getting Florida Atlantic?
Josh Schertz,
Florida Atlantic.
He's an alum.
So you would rather have that than St. Louis?
I don't know if it's a either or situation. I think I would probably generally prefer SLU money wise, but FAU opens your world up a lot. Plus, if Schertz
opens your world up because of the geography?
Yes. And the buzz.
Where's the buzz this year, though? They're going to be like a 10 seed.
The buzz is FAU is FAU. It's a final. It's like it's a brand.
How's that working for Butler?
Bad.
Yeah. Jordan Mason, bad. Yeah.
I think the state of Florida.
Florida, Chicago trending up a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, they're trending up. Okay. They're back. Don't sleep. One against Dayton on Friday. Great game. Were you watching?
No. I was catching up on TV.
No, it's too bad. Look, I think the state of Florida is going to be very active in the carousel. I think Florida State will be open. I think FAU will be open. You know, Amir obviously will be in the mix for things from South Florida. You know, there's always the potential for a Larrañaga retirement. There's always the potential for a surprise here or there. So I would say if you were if you had to move to a state to observe carousel movement, I would head down to the sunny state of Florida.
Did you see on the Trilly Premium, people were saying that Florida State players boycotted practice because of missed NIL payments?
I did not see that. No.
That seems like retirement fuel to me.
I'm not on the Trilly Discord, so I wouldn't know.
I'm not either. I get it secondhand. But, seems like he doesn't post much on Twitter anymore. You post scoops on Twitter. It seems like you got to pony up your $10 a month to get the Trilly Premium scoops. But you know, if I were a coach in my cities, and one day my players were like, we're on strike of practicing until our NIL is resolved, I think I'd probably retire immediately.
I think you're probably right, yeah. All right, let's move off the carousel because there's lots of basketball going on.
Can we do Virginia?
Yeah, let's talk Virginia. I don't remember if we talked Virginia last week, but I think the point is still relevant, so let's keep going.
I mean, they might be the poster child for what you were mentioning earlier, where there's just not enough time for these teams to screw up. They're basically Georgia Tech away from seemingly locking up a bid. I guess we'll see who they get in the ACC tournament, but they have a lot of conference wins, so they're going to get a couple buys, I think. But aesthetically, they are gross. The Jordan Miner solution was temporary, it looks like. They have no juice at all, but All the bracket boys are in agreement that they've done enough, barring a loss to Georgia Tech.
It is kind of – their season's arc is very interesting in that they started strong. The hype was there. They then get worked by Wisconsin and play horrible against West Virginia, and you're like, oh, geez, they stink. Then they turn around. They beat A&M. They beat Syracuse. You're like, all right, everything's fine. Then they flip – they nearly lose to Northeastern. They get destroyed by Memphis. They get destroyed by Notre Dame. They get destroyed by NC State. They get destroyed by Wake. You're like, all right, they're cooked. Then they win. They rip off like 8 in a row. They're ranked. Everybody's hyped. And now they can't do anything anymore.
I mean, there's nothing else to say. They just don't make shots. They play at that slow pace.
The other thing is, like, none of their wins are that good. Like, neutral Florida without Zion Poland is probably their best win. They also have home Wake and at Clemson. At Clemson is probably actually their best one. At Clemson, neutral Florida, home Wake. That's the resume. And home A&M. Like, what is that?
Is that better than, you know, home UConn, home Marquette, road Providence, road Butler, road St. John's?
No.
That's Seton Hall. Seton Hall has the one bad loss to Rutgers. Virginia's bad loss to Notre Dame got wiped away now that Notre Dame is falling out.
I think Virginia has been given the gift of these resume metrics, but no one understands how they actually really work. But if there was a team, if you had to bet on a team to have like an Iowa State level bad NCAA tournament offensive performance this year, it's definitely Virginia.
And then for like a higher seed, maybe Clemson? I don't mean to pick on the ACC because a lot of the ACC bashing did go too far, right? I still think it's a better league than the Mountain West. But I think they should probably only get three tournament teams in. And now maybe Pitt has become good enough to be a fourth team, but they've done, they did some damage earlier with their poor non-con and their kind of poor start of the ACC slate.
I will say Jeff Capel going on a rant about teams playing a bad non-conference schedule to rig the net was really funny.
Well, this is what people aren't grasping about how to rig the net, right? The only way that you can quote-unquote rig the net is to find teams that you know you can beat more than you should, which is like so convoluted that it's like impossible. Like you would have to be like, oh, like we dice up zones, so I'm gonna play Merrimack to open the season because we're gonna win by 50 instead of 30 because we're so good against the zone, or like stuff that's like so minute detail that it's kind of more coincidental than anything, if that makes sense.
Well, so I think the one thing I would say that's very important, no one, as far as I'm aware, no one scheduled based on, no one scheduled bad teams to rig the net. They scheduled bad teams because they played in the Big 12 and they knew they'd be tournament teams if they went 500, right? Iowa State, that's the model, right? Like, Iowa State, year one under Ott, sneaks into the tournament at 7-11 because they went 11-0 in the non-conference or 11-1 in the non-conference, something like that, right? And then the next year, Iowa State, they think they're a little bit better, but again, they rip through the non-conference. They're 9-2, I believe. 9-2, yep. Lost to UConn and to Iowa. That's it. They go 9-9 in the league. They make the NCAA tournament, right? That's what they're trying to do. TCU, same thing. TCU. 2 years ago, 21-13. How? 10-1 in the non-conference, 8-10 in the league, right? Last year, 22-13, 11-1 in the non-conference, 9-9 in the league. That's what they're setting up for. It's not, let's try to be 32nd in the net. But people aren't smart enough to figure that out.
Every day, between message boards, Twitter, as much as I like to rag on the bracket boys, you got this. They all know how this works. There's not a single bracket boy that doesn't understand that, like, winning by a lot is good for your net. In that, beating a 300th ranked team by, like, 10, you're going to fall. Being a 300th ranked team by 50, you're going to move on. I don't
understand how these things work. It's ludicrous to me.
I guess people just don't care enough to look. I think by now, we all should know how the tournament works. I was surprised. Most casual sports fans, obviously not people listening to this podcast or on college basketball Twitter, but the guy who just, turns onto March Madness in March, most of those people don't know that, like, the 16 seeds won their conference tournament. That's why they're in. Like, most of those people don't know that, like, NC State is going to be a better team this year than Colgate. But Colgate's in the tournament as a 16 and NC State's in the NIT. Which, that's something I've known since I was, like, 8 years old. So I figured everybody knew that. Yeah. People don't care enough to know things, I think. Anyway, Wake Forest. Wake Forest went from being super in because their metrics are so great, and they got a couple of their quad one wins that were lacking, and now they're all the way out because their road record is terrible. And they only have two home games left, so I'm not sure by that logic if they can play their way in in this last week of the season, but kind of a wild swing after the court storm, where it went from they've done it, they're making the tournament for the first time in 10 years over, to now up their road record stinks and they're done.
I will say this. I think Wake should be a tournament team. That being said, they will have no one to blame but themselves if they aren't. Right. Notre Dame game is there for the taking. They sleepwalked through it. Even like work your way back, right? Like you lost on the road to Florida State. You lost on the road to NC State. You led in both of those games. They were up, I think, 10 in the second half against NC State. Didn't finish. You know, they led at halftime. They're just trailing by a point at halftime against they led early in the second half against Florida State. Smoked the game, right? Like those are the types of games you have to win. Led by 15 at Virginia Tech. Smoked it, right? I like Wake. I want them to be in. I hope that they find a way to get in. I think if they win these next two games, they're going to be in a good position, or at least in the conversation. But it's going to be hard for me to feel sympathy for them when they're like 3-11 away from home.
And the three wins, I believe, are Towson, Boston College, and then one other win.
Georgia Tech by 29. Yeah.
And they finished the year with two home games, so they can't improve on that road record. They can improve on a neutral record once we get to the ACC tournament. But again, they're going to have a bye in the first round at least, so they're going to need a tougher opponent.
I kind of think at some point, like, Wake's the type of team that could win the ACC tournament.
Definitely. I mean, Duke and UNC are that scary.
No question.
And yeah. Clemson is certainly not scary. Virginia is certainly not scary. Well, but it's tough because the conference tournaments, at least the first rounds, will seemingly have a pretty big impact on who's making it and who's not. Like if a team were to take a bad loss, but there's just so much uncertainty with who's going to be playing who at this point that I kind of just like to ignore all of it until we get actual brackets. But I mean, if Wake's going to be what, a 4 seed, say, in the ACC, and they get North Carolina in the semis, I mean, that's not insurmountable.
The Syracuse fans, I'll think they're like in the tournament
because strength of record.
I think they all just, like, they don't understand that it doesn't matter that they've, like, won 20 games.
I saw some of the bracket boys saying that if they beat Clemson this weekend, then they're in good shape.
I think they're in the mix if they beat Clemson on the road. The problem they have is they're the ultimate team who's, you know, resume and metrics don't line up because every win they have is pretty close and every loss they have is like a bludgeoning.
Right.
But yeah, I saw the Syracuse fans complaining that their net went down because they only beat Louisville by 6. I'm like, Louisville is an embarrassment. Of course it went down. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, Louisville's like 214 or something the other day when I checked. So, yeah, winning by 6, you're going down, certainly.
I will say though, like, I'm enough of a Clemson hater that I might hit Bovada for a little Syracuse money line. A lot to play for. Never know.
Game is at Clemson, right?
Correct. It's gonna be like an 8 or 9 point spread, I would imagine.
So we'll see if Syracuse can get in the mix there. The issue is, so, okay, if Syracuse wins at Clemson, they're in the mix. If Iowa beats Illinois, they're in. If New Mexico beats Utah State on the road, they're in. If Providence beats UConn, they're in. If Seton Hall beats Villanova, they're in. If Villanova beats Creighton, they're in. You know, and then all of a sudden, nobody's in because everybody's in.
Right, just like those weekends when everybody loses, you know.
Right. I was going to say something, I forgot.
All right, we'll cover the ACC.
Do you buy any viability of like Drake or James Madison or Indiana State making it? Or Princeton?
No on Drake, a little on Indiana State, yes on James Madison.
I thought James Madison played a lot of non-D1s, but that must not be the case.
They played one. They played Keystone and beat them 130-59.
For some reason, it was McNeese who played like four.
Correct. But, JMU's problem is that their non-conference night schedule is like 3-4. But part of that's
which is why they're 28-3. Yeah.
Part of it's out of their control because they scheduled Kent State. Kent State wound up not very good. You know, they scheduled Southern Illinois and Fresno. Those teams wound up not very good. They scheduled Buffalo in a home and home. This is year two. Buffalo had obviously been like a 20-win team. They're, you know, one of the worst teams in Division I this year. They had Old Dominion three times this year, twice in league play and once in an old non-conference series. Old Dominion wound up, you know, 7-24 and has already, you know, hired its new coach. So, yeah, like I think they scheduled light to begin with, and then all the games they could have had helped them, except for Michigan State, haven't. I still think that if, you know, they have a top 20 net road win, they should be a tournament, especially if they have two losses all year, right? They got to find a way to get to the final and lose to App State. If they lose to App State, I think they should be in. Look, I hate it because I like App State too. I would like James Madison to make the tournament. So if what it takes for that to happen is App State losing to JMU, I'm willing to sacrifice App State. But I'm very much hopeful that JMU can get in. It also would certainly I think that would lock up West Virginia for Mark Byington.
And then six bid Mountain West dream is probably dead.
I don't think it's dead.
You think that New Mexico can get the road win on Saturday?
I'm not 100% convinced that they need it. I think if they win a good game in the Mountain West tournament, they.
That's fair. They're going to end up 10-8,
right,
which would give them like Boise or Utah State for right.
The only problem
or second after.
Yeah. The big issue that I think New Mexico has, and I think this is really unique to them and Utah State, but Utah State's resume is so, you know, deep enough at this point. It's fine. New Mexico's problem is that their whole resume is built on beating teams in the Mountain West, right? They didn't get anything really out of beating Louisiana Tech or UC Irvine. Those are good wins, but those aren't wins enough to, you know, get you a substantive boost. So their whole resume is beating Mountain West teams, and they're not that good at beating Mountain West teams, right? They're 10-8. So, you know, I think the road Nevada win has aged really nicely. Obviously beat San Diego State by 20. That's a real win. Beat Utah State once already. That's a real win. But they have a horrible home loss. They got swept by UNLV. It'd be great for them if UNLV could get into quad, you know, top 75. So that's quad one and quad two instead of quad two and quad three. But I don't know. New Mexico feels like a first four team, but they just got to find a way to like not feel like they're like coming off a cliff at the end.
Do you think that the committee would have the balls to do St. John's versus the Lobos first round?
It would be very entertaining, I'll say that.
That's almost too cute. Like, that feels like too much hand on the scale.
I think the committee would like put both teams in Dayton and not have them play each other. So it'd be like, oh, Rick and Richard are in Dayton together. You know?
See, if it were like the Kendari Richmond Bowl, Syracuse versus Seton Hall. That's one thing. But when it's Richard Pitino versus Rick Pitino, that feels a little too much thumb on the scale for me.
But I think the primary thing to watch mid majors wise is number one, the bid Steelers in the A-10 and the American. I do keep hearing people say that they think South Florida should get in. which I'm skeptical of, but I do sort of think that if they're a six loss team, they have a case. Right? Because if they were in another league and they were a six loss team, they're in a worse league and they were a six loss team, they'd probably not. But like the Americans are a real league.
But they gave them all the easy games because they figured they were going to suck and they wanted them to stay away from the big boys.
Sure, but they'll still have a road win at North Texas. They'll have beaten SMU. They'll have beaten FAU. They'll have beaten Memphis on the road. Like, I don't know. I think there's enough there. They beat Loyola Chicago in the early in the non-conference. They beat Florida State in the non-conference. They beat Northern Iowa. That's like a realish win. Like, you know, none of those wins are like needle movers, but like, I don't know. I just think they've proven enough that they're more like I don't see how you put Drake in, but put in South Florida. Don't put in South Florida. Like, I don't understand any
of these teams should get in. Like the power teams this year are good enough, right? There are years in the past where, like we mentioned that Bobby Hurley versus Chris Mullin first four game, which was an abomination, right? Like this year, the teams are good enough. Like, St. John's is pretty good. Villanova is good. Michigan State is good. New Mexico is good. Like, we don't need these charity cases with the gaudy win-loss record.
I do think their fates are all somewhat merged in that we can't put in all the mid-majors, right? Like, if Princeton loses in the conference tournament and Indiana State loses in the conference tournament and James Madison loses in the conference tournament and South Florida loses in the conference tournament and I'm trying to think of Grand Canyon, right? Like, we have, like, five of them. The committee can't, like, decide between any of them, so let's put none of them in. But I think of all of them except for, like, James Madison, for instance, left on an island, it's like, oh, well, we can, like, slide a first four spot to, like, you know, 28-4 James Madison. I think they might do it. I will say this. I think the most likely outcome is that they like stick one of those teams as like the first team out, and they'll be like, yeah, you know, it's like Richmond's fault for winning the Atlantic 10. When it's not, remember when they did that with Dayton a couple years ago, where like we didn't think Dayton had a shot.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the first team out, and I was like, oh, you know, if only there hadn't been a bid stealer. And you're like, all right, like lay off. Like we know they weren't actually the first team out.
And then just. South Florida, yeah, they're playing Tulane and Tulsa to close the year, so they're probably going to be 17-8 with losses to Central Michigan in Maine, but we'll see.
Let's see. How about this? Where have we not been? I feel like we've covered most of this, right? We haven't really talked about the Big East.
Well, the Big 12 and the Mountain West. This is like the Big 12 middle and the Mountain West top. They're going to be all over the 8-9 lines, which kind of makes them less interesting at this point. Like Boise State, Utah State, Nevada, TCU, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Texas. Like all those teams are going to be playing each other. And they're not in danger of missing the tournament.
Yeah, I saw like Oklahoma and TCU popping up on some people's like last four buys, but like there's nothing that those teams can do to like there's such a large gap between them and like actually missing the tournament at the moment. Where like, right. Yeah, it'd be good for Oklahoma to make sure they beat Cincinnati at home on Tuesday. But like they can't, you know, they can't get out by like losing at Texas, you know. They'd still be like a 19 win. Yeah, like they could use one more win because they're 7-9 right now. So as long as they're like 8-10 and not, you know, 7-11, they're probably all right.
You want to talk Big East though?
Yeah, we probably should. Here's a question for you. Knowing the Tyler Kolek injury, if you had to place a bet on Bovada of a Big East team other than UConn to make the Final Four, who would that bet be?
Final Four of the NCAA tournament?
Correct.
It's got to be Creighton, right? Like this is a. Are you buying the hot shooting Wildcats with Kyle Neptune?
I'm not buying them.
No.
I guess my question was, do you think Creighton's better than Marquette now? If given that there's like some questions about Kolek.
I do, yeah. I mean, Kolek's been their best player. Creighton's had some decent tournament success the past few years with this group.
Yeah.
They have three All-American level players. You know, all three are not going to be All-Americans, but Alexander, Shireman, and Cuthbert are all that good. Ashworth's hitting shots now. So, you know, to have two NBA perimeter guys with one of the best rim protectors in recent college basketball and then shooters, it's gotten Creighton to the top 10 so far, and I think they're in a great spot. You know, if they're a three seed, we just talked about, you know, most of the six seeds and six seed candidates are just not that scary.
Right. Well, last year they came from the sixth line because they had to beat NC State, then they beat Baylor. I don't have any recollection of that Baylor game. I'd love to know like what I was doing. I'm assuming I was at my site. I'm just trying to think of what game that would have been. Yes, I think that would have been like Indiana, Miami.
I think they just got out to a comfortable lead and just kind of like held it at like 8 or 10 the whole time, if memory serves. But
30 ball for Ryan Nembhard. How about that? It is crazy to think that they were like, you know, one bounce basically away from getting into the Final Four.
And then how it for 95% of the season, it looked like Ryan Nembhard was the biggest lose-lose transfer. Where, like, Gonzaga wasn't very good, and Stephen Ashworth stunk. So it was like, what was Ryan Nembhard doing? He killed both these teams. But now they're both right into the ship.
Yeah, I actually think Gonzaga's really dangerous right now. I mean, Ike's been phenomenal. Like, Ike has quietly been, like, a 20-10 guy the last, you know, month. I mean, since the Kentucky game, he scored 20 or more in every game. So that's seven straight games, 20 or more. He's had double-digit rebounds in two of those games. He's had seven or more rebounds in five of those games, I believe. If my math serves correct. Like, he looks like Graham Ike of, you know, elite Wyoming 2 years ago. And if he's that level of dude, combined with Nembhard, combined with the rest of their size, right? They're such a big, imposing team. Greg can space it enough. Hickman can obviously really shoot. Watson's a very good player. Like, all of a sudden, they feel like a team that can make a run. I'm not sure they're like a title-type team, but could they make a Sweet 16? Certainly.
Where do the bracket boys have them now?
I think a lot of people have them 8-9. But then, like, they're all saying, like, oh, you know, if they win the tournament, they could be, like, a 5 or a 6.
Just by beating San Francisco and St. Mary's?
Well, because at some point, they would then they'd have, like, 4 or 5 quad ones.
Oh.
And so then it's, like, then you, like, look at the whole picture, like, top 20 metrics, no real bad losses, just the one to, you know, Santa Clara that's not great. You know, the strong non-conference strength of schedule. You, like, once you start really looking, it's like, all right, they don't have a ton of great wins, but they're like elite metrics in their turn. They're like a high turn.
Yeah. I mean, if they get to the 5 line, then yeah, they'll have a great chance, but we'll see.
You want to do a little carousel before we wrap up?
Yeah. I love the carousel. I love portal season.
I will say, kind of feels like NC State should open. Not convinced that they will, but I think the buyout's like doable enough. Like,
Kevin just made it last year though.
Yeah, but like, they're 17-13. They're probably gonna lose at Pitt on Saturday. They're gonna go 17-14. They'll have lost, I believe, 7 of 9 to close the regular season. And even like drawn further back, they have lost like 13 of 17 dating back to being 5-1 in the league on, you know, January 16th. He's under 500 in his tenure as in the ACC. He'll have missed the tournament in 3 of the last 4 years. he has not won an NCAA tournament game. He's under 500 overall in ACC conference play as head coach. Like, it's just one of those, like, it just feels like you're spinning the wheels. Like, great, like, you run it back, you give him $1.5 million of NIL. They're in, you know, they make the tournament next year as an 11 seed. Like, is that what you're accepting? I guess that's the question.
So, like, who, right? All these teams want to move, right? And, like, we're going from Chris Holtman to maybe Dusty May. That's at Ohio State, right? NC State. Who are we gonna get? Like, Dustin Kearns?
Right, Byington, Kearns, you know.
And I love Dustin Kearns. We've been on that since his Presbyterian days.
I'm flagging.
But at some point, like, we're treading into Maryland Turgeon Willard territory, where we're going to end up with just another Kevin Keats.
Well, right, but again, I think the question really is what you're doing right now okay? And if it's not, then at some point you have to reevaluate, right? Like,
I mean, Kevin Keats is not a bad coach, and he has not done, like, terribly. Like, they've narrowly missed the tournament a few times. I get it that they're always on the bubble.
Well, I guess, how hard do you think it will be to replicate what Kevin Keats?
I guess that's fair.
Right? Like, if you...
Do you have any names that you're sitting on here? Amir Abdur-Rahim?
I don't know that they Justin could... Curry. I don't know about Amir for that. You know, I think it would probably be, like, one of these mid-major guys. I think Amir would take it. But, like, yeah, look, I just think, like, big picture, you know, if you believe you're a top-half job in the ACC, which I think NC State fully believes it is, then why is what Kevin Keats has done acceptable there?
I guess that's fair. I'm just still, I guess, I'm still in the previous era. I'm still head around 1 year after the NCAA tournament, we're kind of going to lose.
Well, again, I think, to be clear, I think there's a good chance that there's a good chance he gets another year. I'm just saying I would move if I were them.
I mean, it wouldn't be Jamie Dixon. You know, on the Jamie Dixon scale, but it's not a slam dunk.
Agreed. But yeah, like, I think Dusty to Ohio State. I still have zero sense of Louisville.
People want this Musselman, Chris Beard, Will Wade chain. They were talking about that on Greg Sage's show the other night too. I think people just like that chain reaction. Where that's coming from.
I'll be curious to see who gets Florida State if Leonard does retire. Like, is that Amir? Is that Will Wade, right? Like, what, like, who's getting hired there?
Is there any national interest in, like, Kim English?
Stop shopping Kim. He's a good coach. He's done yeoman's work to be in this position, given they lost Hopkins.
Oh, stop it. Oh, my God. You're not one of these people. We're Providence. We make the tournament every year. We might not win any games, but damn it, we're going to be in that tournament every year.
They didn't have Hopkins. One of their three best players got hurt midway through the season, and they've been competitive since. What are we doing?
They have enough talent to make the tournament. Like, my God. Oh, my God. I'm not watching the NIT. I'll tell you that much. Last time in the NIT, I said I was not going to watch. I ended up watching. And we got blown out by Mike Anderson, Arkansas.
I remember that.
So I kind of
I think Butler's going to win. I think Butler's going to win the NIT. Them or Memphis. Memphis might win the NIT. Memphis is like.
Does Memphis have any tournament?
Memphis is either winning the NIT or they're losing in the first round. No in between.
They have Dusty on Sunday, right? So it would winning a game be enough to bump them into the tournament?
Not enough.
Not enough. Okay. That American conference tournament is wide open. I have no faith in Dusty. This is going down with Memphis. And it's fallen off. South Florida can't lose. I have no idea what direction that's going in. And both A-10 and American on Sunday, us Bubble fans are going to be – well, I mean, probably it's going to lose to UConn to be out. But the Seton Hall and St. John's fans of the world are going to be holding their breath. And they'll, you know, right down to the wire on Sunday.
No question. Any other carousel things you want to get to?
So we said Danny Sprinkle to Washington. Who fills Utah State?
Wouldn't be surprised if they kind of go outside the box. Like, David Riley would be, like, the logical one, like, out west. But, like, yeah, like, I don't really know that there's, like, a name necessary. Like, I wonder if they would hire Russell Turner at Irvine. It feels like it's just been too long. I wonder if they would be able to hire someone from, like, outside the region. You know, they did the frying out of, like, could they get, like, a Jared Calhoun?
I mean, they're three for the last three on coaches. They're
killing it.
Either they're killing it or Utah State is just set up in this Mount West for a lot of success. But Craig what? Smith to Ryan Odom to Danny Sprinkle.
The thing that's wild is I think we think super highly of Ryan Odom. Ryan Odom probably did the worst job because he inherited all the players. He got given Ashworth and Bairstow and, you know. Whereas Craig Smith was, you know, Craig Smith did all the work.
Going to Portugal to get Demius Cada. Trying to think of it. The implications.
Yeah, where else are we wearing at the? Yeah, who would be like a random coach that would take Utah State? Let's get Will Wade at Utah State. Be good.
That'd be great. Yeah.
I think Will Wade would be perfect for UNLV, but I'm not convinced it opens anymore.
What about like Bryce Drew, or is that not a big enough jump because Grand Canyon's got all that money?
Bryce Drew wouldn't take it, I don't think.
And then we still need a spot for Josh Schertz.
I'm telling you, FAU. He would fit Utah State because you could recruit white kids in the system.
I mean, does he want to recruit white kids or is he just in the valley, you know?
I think it's like a skill-based system, so having white kids is like not bad. Like of the types of style of play that Josh Schertz, I mean, Josh Schertz is like most of his team is black. Like, you know, Ryan Conwell is a black kid, Swope, like they're athletic. But I'm just saying because of the style of play, it wouldn't kill you if you were playing like a less athletic style.
That makes sense. So any calls you want to make as to which teams are going to play themselves in or out this week?
Honestly, like, I don't have a great feel for it. I usually have some guts. This year, I don't have many guts.
I feel like the basketball gods owe us a Georgia Tech over Virginia.
I hope so. That'd be great.
I mean, it would be funny if the ACC only gets three bids, or the Big East only gets three bids. That'd be more sad than funny for me, but funny for other people. And the Pac-12 sitting on two bids, so
it's like the last like what, six spots plus the two bid thieves or R is what is up for grabs. That sentence didn't make any sense, but
yeah, I think it's about five or six spots.
That's all I have.
All right, let's wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week, right before I head to Vegas for conference tournament. Should be a lot of fun. So, all right, folks, enjoy your first week of Champ Week. When we come back in a week, you will have some automatic bids punched. So keep your eyes out.